Thanks for tuning into the Medevac Podcast, powered by the Robert Irvine Foundation, whose mission is to support and strengthen the physical and mental well-being of our nation's heroes and their families. I'm one of your hosts, David Reed.
And I'm your other host, Christian Myers. Thank you very much for joining us today on the Medevac Podcast. If you're new here, there's a price for the show. You have to share it with a friend or family member if you get something out of today's episode. We've got some pretty interesting topics we're covering today, so you guys are going to like this one. Our guest today is Andrew Tommy Thompson. He is a Master Gunnery Sergeant in the Marine Corps, just about to wrap up his 20 years in service, and we're going to hear from him today about his time in service and some things that he's dealt with. So thanks for joining us today, Tommy.
Thanks for coming on.
I'm really glad. Glad I got to be here.
Yeah.
Are you guys from this area or Tampa?
We're from San Antonio, Texas, California originally.
Okay.
But we're out here.
What part of California?
Northern California. So a town called Tracy. So we actually both went to high school together.
Yeah.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Now we've known each other for almost
20 years.
20 years.
What's NorCal? Do you guys SAC or are we talking like
Bay it's about an hour and a half south of Sacramento.
Yeah.
Okay. So Central Valley, like right in the middle of California.
Basically
One of the guys I came, Yeah, it's kind of confusing when you go to different parts of California because it's completely different than what you would think.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You think beach town, California. One of my close friends is from Petaluma. He's a police officer there. But I go up to Petaluma, you know, do Thanksgiving with the family.
Okay.
Kind of thing. So,
yeah.
So I'm a little bit NorCal exposed.
But, yeah.
You know.
Well, you know, we don't really claim California anymore.
Well, it's probably a safe thing to do.
Just, you know, it's a little bit of a night. Love the weather.
Yeah.
Love the weather there.
But, exactly. My wife will argue all day. She's like, I really loved it there, but, you know.
It's a little nuts sometimes.
All politics and everything. It's a little bit different. But, so I'm originally from North Dakota.
Oh, okay.
Well,
South Canada.
Yeah, South Canada. Actually probably safer. I was 15 miles from Canada, 17 miles from Montana.
Okay.
So if you kind of like punch me up into the corner of North Dakota,
I was
born in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
So if you guys have heard of the Cornhuskers,
mm-hmm.
right?
So, yeah.
Well, they used to be a good football team.
Back
when the wing tee was effective. Sorry.
No, this is perfect. I was going to cut us real quick. So your hand, when you raise it, it's going to cover the camera.
Okay.
So just be cognizant of that. That's all good. So
I'll do my.
No worries. While you're talking, you could do it because it's going to cut to your camera. This one.
Okay.
So just be cognizant, like if your hand's up here or whatever, blah, 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 while we're talking, you know, whatever.
Cool.
Cool. So pretty interesting. North Dakota, South Canada, like I said. Is that where you enlisted in the military? And what kind of inspired you to join? Was it family?
So I guess I'll just talk about my father's side of the family. Both my parents have family members that served.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. My mother's brother was a Bronze Star recipient in Desert Shield and did some pretty wild things there.
Okay.
My father was a counterintelligence officer in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
His brother was a platoon sergeant at Hamburger Hill. So, when I was in college, and I didn't know anything at this point, just think before you guys joined the service, right?
Mm-hmm.
She showed me a Bronze Star write-up of him from Hamburger Hill in Vietnam.
Okay.
You guys have heard of it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
You're aware of it. So yeah, I think it was the 82nd or 101st. It was one of the airborne, right? And I read it, and it talked about him. He got shot through his legs with a 7.62 rounds on day one. Mm-hmm. By 3 days in, he had, with tourniquets on both his legs, dragged some 60 people off of this target.
Wow.
Pretty wild, right? You know, when you joined, you didn't really know. So what that was like or what the impacts of that you guys have all seen kinetic environments. I didn't know. I just remember reading that and being like, okay, well, my uncle's a badass. So,
absolutely.
So, right.
Yeah.
So his son is a sniper in the Marines, got out, and now he does some other stuff. But so that was my back. That was kind of my understanding.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. My father left the Army and went through Dallas Theological Seminary Okay. So, right. So he's a pastor now. He's an evangelical pastor. So that's kind of my environment growing up, hunting, fishing, mm-hmm. playing sports. I was a high school athlete, like most of us were. And I went and played football, after high school. So I went and did not anything crazy, you know, played in college for 4 years. And I played for I'm going to say a semi-pro football team, but sure. It was way less than you would think. It definitely. It sounds cool, but think like Flint, Michigan. Who's the guy from, the Anchorman? Will Ferrell.
Yeah. Ron Burgundy.
Think Will Ferrell, like yeah. semi-pro.
Yeah. Gotcha. Oh,
okay. Gotcha. Right. You know, the basketball.
Yeah. Semi-pro.
Okay. Yeah. So gotcha. Like, that's not a plug saying I was some kind of awesome football player. I just, you know, I kept doing it after college.
Yeah.
And in 2004, I was going to school in, Eastern North Dakota. And, you know, we all remember where we were at 9/11, where we were sitting, where you first got the news, or where you were in boot camp, or maybe you were going through SQT or whatever you're doing. Like somehow there was an impact where it was like, hey, this is, you know, I think I can say this now and they won't track me down. I think I was smoking pot in my college dormitory. Because I'm pretty sure that my recruiter made me say I'd only smoked pot 5 times. Which yeah. is completely a lie.
But, yeah.
but you know,
that I remember.
5 times or less is recreational, and anything over that, now they have to like do some paperwork or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
So like,
yeah.
I'm like, are you sure I should lie about this? And he's like, oh, you definitely should lie about yeah. this. Right. So I'm pretty sure that I was experiencing that, and I was watching TV, and you know, we all saw it happen.
Yeah.
Or you found out about it.
Sure.
Right. One way or the other. And so 2004, I remember watching an interview. This was my senior year in college at that time. I remember watching an interview with, you know, a Marine. It would have been anybody, but it was a Marine outside of Fallujah. And he was talking about, you know, what they were dealing with.
Okay. There, right? Yeah.
Could have been Ramadi. I don't remember. And I remember thinking, okay, well, I'm able-bodied. I should probably do this.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like you probably all felt the same.
It's like an obligation.
Yes. And I was raised that way.
Yeah.
Like my, you know, I had this conversation and I'll say it now because it matters to me, but you remember those little trampolines about the size of this table?
Oh, yeah.
And you could like jog in place.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like, you'd watch your dad in the 80s, like, I don't know, doing the,
yeah,
jumping jacks
stuff,
on yeah. the jumping trampoline jacks. And stuff. Well, so my dad, before he would go to work, he'd go down in the basement and he'd watch, I don't know, Ronald Reagan or something, you know, on TV, watch some news. And he would, you know, jog in place on the trampoline. Nothing against my dad, you know. You fitness, what are you going to do, right? And he would do push-ups and he'd do those things. And this was in 1989, 1990. Mm. I think Desert Storm, Desert Shield, that kind of thing. And my dad's like, son, I need you to just sit down for a second. I just want to tell you this, right? There's certain things that are worth dying for. Mm. And one of them is the freedom of our country. Standing up for it. And I can't remember exactly how he said it. Probably not doing it justice, but I never forgot that. Mm-hmm. I never forgot that. And regardless of how we feel about, you know, weapons of mass destruction and however, whatever, you know, you guys know the whole controversy about Iraq and whatever.
Yeah.
Our country was still in a position where you either sign up or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that probably telling your story right now.
Yeah.
Because I felt the same way.
Sure.
I'm comfortable right now. I'm going to college. I'm in good shape. Why the hell shouldn't I be over there? And I'm watching this Marine get interviewed outside of Fallujah. Mm-hmm. And he's full of dust and, you know, covered in dirt. That should be me. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so I went to an officer selection recruiter, because I had a degree.
Sure.
That was a, I almost had a degree.
Yeah.
Didn't actually get one.
Oh, you didn't.
I do now. No, that was, yeah. We'll get to that. We'll get to I graduated from college in 22 years. So we'll just, we're going to get to
it's
that
a good run.
At some point. Yeah. It was a good run, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what's the term they say in the, what's the TV show where the guy's like, Dad, a lot of people go to college for 7 years. And he's like, yeah, they're called doctors.
Doctor.
Right. Mine was 20. But so I went to an officer selection recruiter in Fargo, North Dakota. I said, hey, look, you know, this is where I'm at. I'm looking to graduate in 6 months. Mm-hmm. You know, what does it look like for me? Because when I contacted my, I did what you would do. My cousin was a sniper in the Marine Corps. My uncle was, I told you his story. And my dad was a, I think he got out as like a captain in the Army or something. I was like, well, what do you guys recommend I do? And they said, don't waste your college education.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it. Use that. Be an officer. Mm-hmm. This is an enlisted man telling me this. Right. So thank God I didn't. Do that. Okay. So, and I'm super thankful that it didn't work out for me. But I went in, talked to the officer selection recruiter, and, you know, at the time and what everything was happening, he's like, well, you're probably not going to be able to get in for about 8 or 9 months.
Mm.
I said, okay. Well, then what are my options? It's like, well, you could go enlist if you really. I was afraid that the war was going to end.
And you're
in
gonna miss
2004.
It. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I would join the military for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't joining the military because I wanted free college or anything. I was joining the military because I wanted to go have the same dirt on my face that this guy that I was watching.
Yeah.
He interviewed outside of Fallujah. So, I went down and I enlisted and did the whole MEPS thing. What are they, when you're doing like the delayed entry program or something, you guys
are MEPS
very well aware of it. Yeah. I kind of want to go back just a little bit. So I played football through college. And if I can just like spend 3 minutes describing what my life was like then, which is probably a lot like what your life was with when you were in the regiment or doing whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you get up in the morning, I don't know, 5 or 6, my roommate, he's a strong safety, I'm a linebacker on the team.
Mm-hmm.
We both wake up, make some eggs, get in the car, drive together down to, you know, the university. 6 to 7:30, you're gonna lift some weights and you're gonna do some physical training kind of thing. You're gonna watch film from about 8 to about 9:30. Probably going to go to some college class or something that you're not paying any attention to, right? And then you're going to come back and you're going to go through some PT and do some other things, like physical therapy type stuff.
Sure.
Wrap your ankles, do whatever. And then at 2:30 or 3, you're going out on the field. You're going to spend 3 or 4 hours walking through drills, practicing, you know, banging your heads against each other, that kind of thing. And then you're going to go home, right? And these are your people.
Yep.
Right. Mm. And so when I left, when I was no longer eligible to play football, I went through, I guess you'd call it a depression phase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where I just, my identity was, you know, if you guys in high school, you might wear your jersey the day on Friday before a game or something. Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
And you're getting the high fives.
That's your
in the
tribe.
Hallway and,
yeah.
That's your thing.
Your identity, right?
Also your identity.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Christian, I'm a football player. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what I, the foundation of my identity was in being in the newspaper on the weekends and being the, you know, that's how people knew me.
Mm-hmm.
Which wasn't healthy, but it was what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember going through the few months between that and joining the military and just being lost.
Yeah.
Searching and I wanted to have purpose and I needed it. Mm-hmm. And I think that our personalities, you know, we're all different, right? God made us all different. We all have different things that drive us and make us who we are. Mm-hmm. But for me, like holding the line for the team was the thing that made me feel fulfilled at the end of the day.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. I had pride in it and whatnot. So when that went away, I had to find something. And I didn't come to this realization until maybe, I don't know, 10 years after I joined the military. Mm. And I looked back and I was like, I was hurting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was stuck. I needed to go do something.
Yeah.
Mm. And I didn't care about my degree. I didn't graduate from college. I literally walked out of college and said, screw you. I'm done with this. Sign me up for the Marines. I enlisted. Mm-hmm. So I went from almost having a double major at a university to being a E2 in the Marines, you know, running around like a squirrel trying to, yeah. But it gave me a purpose.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was good.
Yeah.
So I enlisted in 2004, went to boot camp in 2005.
So let me ask you this. How fast did that sense of purpose kind of find its way to you? Like, I mean, it could be as quick as stepping off the bus, right? And just getting into that environment right away. You had to be like, whoa, this is it. Or
it's, yeah, no, I mean, that's a good, how long had you been in when you went to RASP? Or did you do
RASP? I joined with an option 20 contract. So okay. I got to go to, you know, my infantry basic, airborne school, and then to selection.
So you did that at Benning?
Yeah, all of it
at Benning. 507? Yeah, okay, yep.
Yeah.
So I think the best way to answer that question is when you're in boot camp, you're so busy, you don't get to have an opinion about anything.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's the same in the Army. My brother is a 10th Mountain Division guy.
Okay.
And gosh, I just want to do a little sideways thing on him because my brother is an amazing human being. He's 2 years younger than me. 10th Mountain Division. He deployed to Afghanistan in 2006. He did a standard 9-month mm-hmm. Army deployment because, you know, we didn't truncate him down to 6 months until later, right?
Yeah.
He's flying home, finally done with this nasty deployment where he was, you know, Korangal Valley?
Oh, yeah.
Heard of it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
And it's not a good spot, right? Yeah. So he was at the base of a hill in a little fob that in the Korangal. He gets on a plane. He's on a C-17 flying back to the U.S. Fort Drum. Are you familiar with it, right? Watertown?
Yeah.
Okay. So my mother drives to Fort Drum and gets ready to receive my brother. This is going to be great, right? Dad, you know, he's coming home. And he's going to be the unit that replaced them got wiped out real quick. Mm. And so they turned their C-17 around.
In the air.
In the air. And they corralled all the families off the flight line up in water, you know, up there, brought them into an auditorium and said, listen, they're going to do another one. So they'll be there for another 7 or 8 months.
Wow.
And that was pretty tough for my brother.
Mm.
And so he came home and he got out of the Army and he works in the oil rigs now. And he's an amazing human being. But I watched that happen, and I had not been in a conflict zone yet. I was just getting into my military career, whatnot. Mm-hmm. One of the good friends of ours that was, you know, he was an early Iraq deployer, and he just took an IED and didn't make it out of there. And that was catalyst for my brother joining the Army.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay.
So I joined the Marines. To what you were asking, I was so busy in, you know, boot camp running around with my head cut off and, you know, trying to not get in trouble, that kind of thing. You guys call it A school, I think, or when you go to your MOS.
Mm-hmm. AIT.
Like AIT. That's right. AIT.
Yeah.
Yep. what do they call it in the Air Force?
Tech school.
When you go to tech school. Okay. Yeah. When you learn your actual trade after you validate yourself in boot camp. So same thing for us. So I went through this thing called SOI, School of Infantry. Mm-hmm. They do it down in Camp Pendleton. I think there's one on the East Coast as well. And while you're there, they will kind of screen everybody and see who has a GT score that is, I don't know, higher than 30 or something, who knows. And if you can swim and you can run, and then they'll bring you in, and they do this little like indoc thing.
Okay.
Where you're going to run a physical fitness test, 3 miles, some pull-ups, some sit-ups. They put you in the pool and they see if you can survive, that kind of thing, right? And that is the recon screener. So I did that when I was at the School of Infantry. So I never actually spent a day at an infantry unit in the Marine Corps. So disclaimer out there.
Yeah.
Good for you.
I guess. Maybe. Yeah. I mean,
I think it's good for you.
You could argue
in regiment the entire time. I could say yes. Right. I agree. Yeah.
And there, other than the fact that like we don't jump right on smooth deployments and stuff or do a jort cycle, but I know a lot of Rangers and recon and Rangers have a lot of similarities as far as like physical fitness and discipline and the way that we treat each other and hold each other accountable and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, the blue book and the way that you guys do that. I mean, we have a similar thing. So that was a beautiful thing. So as soon as I finished the School of Infantry, I got picked up in a bus, drove over to the, you know, recon thing. I was in my dress uniform and they dumped us out onto this road, and the guy starts running. He says, come with me. And, you know, 2, 3, 4 miles down the road, he says, if anybody falls out, you're going back to the infantry, right? You know, classic threat that probably wasn't going to be real,
sure,
but it was scared the hell out of me.
Absolutely.
Right. And so I remember sitting there just sweating through, we were crawling through this river, and it's just
in your service dress.
So everybody had to buy new uniforms. That's right. But that was my kind of, you know, welcome into this. So I went through the reconnaissance training and quite frankly, I needed that. I needed that. It moved me out of a place that I was going to go back to, which I'll talk about that. I was going to go back to that dark space when I left the football team and I didn't have the camaraderie, the same thing happening.
Yeah.
I was going to go back there. Didn't know that. Right. But I wasn't there now. Right. Now I have this team.
Yeah.
Right. So I have all these folks with me. I go through what they call pre-recon school or whatever. It's like RASP. It's, you know, you're learning to land navigate and you're learning how to carry a heavy pack.
Just getting smoked the whole time.
You're getting smoked the whole time. Right? Yeah. I mean, it's like fun for the dudes that are in between deployments. They're like, let's go fuck with the dudes.
Beat up the new kids.
Let's go beat up the new kids, right? So you're like learning all the weird hazing tricks that you never knew about before and, you know, running down a beach with fins, naked with fins on your feet and that kind of shit. With a chem light shoving your armpits.
Nose.
Thank you. Thank you for not making me say it. So I got to go through all that and it was a fun thing. You know, I learned a lot.
Yeah.
I think I learned a lot more about just being disciplined and not being a bitch, basically. Yeah.
Sure. About yourself, learning about yourself during that, right?
What's your shutoff limit?
Yeah. What's your limit?
How far can you go?
Limiting factor.
And then I got stationed in Okinawa. So I went out to, you guys are familiar with like where the first is and those guys there at Torrey Station and whatnot. So I was at Camp Schwab, Okinawa, 3rd Recon Battalion. It was honestly a blessing because if anybody here, you know, listens to this and they know anything about 3rd Recon Battalion, there's a difference between being stationed in California and going home to your house every night. Than when you're stationed overseas and you go to a barracks room where they also know where you are.
Yeah.
So you never actually go home. Right. So I found myself doing midnight, you know, beach surveys. we talked about digging tank traps and that kind of thing.
Sure.
But it made me accountable and it made me more disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
It sucked.
Sure.
I've never been hazed like I was. Can I say that here?
Yeah.
I've never been hazed like I was in 3rd Recon Battalion, but they had a reputation for it.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't know. Is there certain Ranger battalions that are more like
so bad,
stricter here?
So bad in Ranger Regiment. It's so bad. It cleaned up.
And I know a lot of Rangers, so I know some of those dudes are pretty hard motherfuckers.
So we always have same thing as the East and West Coast, right? We have 3 battalions.
Savannah, JBLM, and then Benning is the...
That's Moore now, right? So they changed the name.
Oh, yeah.
Fort Moore.
Can't call it Benning anymore.
Call it Benning now. Yeah.
I think it's racist or something. I don't know.
It's Confederate, whatever.
Sure.
Anyway, I digress.
Fort Liberty. Go back.
The hazing is real big, but the farther away from you go from the flagpole, of course, it gets worse. So Fort Moore is your like high and tight, you know. In Washington, it's like, we're going to use the elements against you, right? You know, like duct tape you upside down on a tree in the
damn
rain,
right.
You know, Thunder Watch, right?
Year did you go into the regiment?
2008.
Okay.
2008.
So in 2005, I'm at airborne school, and that was right when ACUs were starting to be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were an 18 X-ray or you were going into RASP, you got ACUs and everybody else is wearing your tricolor basically.
And same thing with the multis when they came out, the multicams.
Yeah. The multicams were like a slow drip too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember, you remember when you were at the 507th doing airborne school, get on the cables, you know what I'm talking about? I remember I would like walked around the corner one time and I saw these dudes and they were doing like, you guys know what 8-count bodybuilders are?
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever, right? And so I'm looking at these dudes and they're wearing ACUs. So I know they're either 18 X-ray guys or they have a RASP contract or something. And I see them, they're all doing eight counts. Well, you know what happens when you see somebody doing 8 counts, you go the other way. Like, you don't even
that's very true.
Hey, you come over
about
here.
Face.
Get over here. Yeah, join them. Yeah. Right? And so I immediately turned around and walked away. And I remember looking at one of the army dudes and I was like, who are they? And they're like, well, they're getting ready for RASP. Those guys are going into their thing. So, so I got to watch some of that early stage. But that was also kind of my experience in Okinawa.
Sure.
You know, a going away party for like a guy leaving the unit. It's a great opportunity to bring in the new guys.
Mm. Yes.
Teach them some tradition.
Yeah.
And also test their mettle.
Were birthdays for you like just a bad thing to bring up as well? Like, cause in regiment, like you don't want to say your birthday. I've seen people get run over by cars on like people whose birthday are just mowing down privates.
So I'm actually curious to hear how you guys celebrate birthdays because we do two things. Either you take a strip charge and you whoop somebody's ass with it, which shock, heat, pressure. Let's talk about explosives, right?
Yeah.
You got C4. Or C2 stacked on top of it, so whatever, right? You start smacking somebody with that as many times as they are old. Or if you're a shooter, this is a real honor, right? If you're a shooter, you get an ammo can lid. You know, the green ammo cans, that little handles, and you get one of those taken off, and that's what your tool is. But either way, you're not sitting down.
You're getting pelted.
You're getting pelted. How do they do it in the regiment?
So I'll give you a story. And this
I'm
freshly striped, right? So I go from now your junior NCO
NCO. Corporal or?
I was a sergeant. So sergeant? Sergeant. It changes a little bit, right? The responsibilities, dynamics change, you know, especially as a Ranger
sergeant
NCO.
Sergeant Ranger Regiment's actually pretty leadership position.
It is huge, yeah.
You're in charge of like 30 people. You got a lot of shit going on.
Oh, yeah. So, I walk into our little AO area and, there is a private, his name's, I'm not going to mention his name, but he's, he was a mouth breather too. Oh, he deserved it. I kind of laughed internally. You know, you just laugh internally.
I love him.
He's upside down, duct taped to a ladder against the locker. And one of these privates, you know, senior private, has a bucket and mop. And he dips it in the mop and he just starts washing his face with this mop. Dirty mop water. Like, and, yes. And I'm like, they're waterboarding this kid. Like, like he's like sitting there, like, you know, like having a good birthday. And then whilst this is happening, another private is taking a wire boar brush and rubbing it on his forehead to the point where this kid's like bleeding. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I walk in and I'm just like, what in the world?
Guys, I'm going to be accountable for this.
Yeah. Like, I was like, what in the world is going on? And, you know, at this time, it was just, they're like, well, it's his birthday, Sergeant. Everybody's just in parade rest.
Jeff's birthday, man. And what did you expect?
I'll be back in 3 minutes. And if this isn't unfucked, I'm reaming y'all up. Yeah. Yeah. So that's birthdays, man.
Yeah. It's birthdays. Yeah. I mean, it almost makes you hate the holiday.
In the Air Force, you get a cake.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
A day off and a cake.
Yeah. But I don't know.
This is like two portions.
Yeah, Captain called me. He's like, it's your birthday. Just go ahead and take today off, you know? Yeah.
Come on down and get a cake.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say this. If my child were to like say, I was thinking about joining the Marines, the Army, or the Air Force, I'd be like, you go to that Air Force recruiter.
Trade skills.
Right now.
That's what I would say.
Go to that Air Force recruiter right now.
Yeah, trade skills.
Yes. Right. I was going through our combat dive school in Panama City.
Oh, yeah.
I was super young. I think I was an E3 or something. And I dated an Air Force chick for a little bit. And she took me back to, I don't know, Luke Air Force, some Air Force base near Panama City. And we get to her house. I said house. We get to her house and we walk in. She's an E3. E2, E3. I was like, E3, right? So we're young. We're breaking any rules. She shows me she's got a living room, kitchen, dining room. And I've got like this Bob Barker, like bunk bed.
Yeah.
That they took from a prison inmate.
Yeah.
Like donated it to the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
And now I get to sleep
on
it.
So the prisoners get new ones.
Oh, yeah.
The original mattress.
Exactly. Yeah. It's it's got stains on it and stuff. And I'm like, are you serious? Yeah. So my child will join.
Yeah, they would
be treated differently.
This is no joke. A couple times we went down to Pendleton, they'd say, well, we have no availability on base, but the barracks are open. And they would not allow us to stay in the barracks. They're like, it's against Air Force policy to stay in Marine Corps barracks. We're like, these guys live here, though.
And it should be. It should be against the policy.
Yeah.
Because it's not okay.
Yeah.
It's not okay.
It is.
The amount of times... I think I can say this now. We'll see. Maybe I'll get in trouble later. The amount of guys that... So this was a fun thing that we did. You buy tasers and you buy OC spray, right? Oh,
sounds and then, fun.
And you wake dudes up by tasing their feet or spraying them while they're sleeping.
Oh, God.
And that's normal barracks life.
We're
all living in a squad bay.
What a terrible way to wake up.
Horrendous.
It is. Yeah. The best thing is when you fill a garbage bag with OC spray and then you put that over somebody's head and wait till they wake up.
Yeah.
It's a new way to, you know, speaking from experience, it's an interesting way to come to terms with your life.
Sure. Yeah.
But okay. So moving on, cause I know that we're we're deep in this thing. So 2006 Okinawa, I did a couple deployments. You know, I did like all the initial schools, airborne and SEER school and all that kind of crap. and my platoon sergeant, a guy named Samuel Wells, Wells Samuel, his two first names. It's kind of like Ricky Bobby, right? You know, MARSOC, you guys know MARSOC, right? Like it was just becoming a thing. So 2006, MARSOC just stood up, you know, the whole, kind of the soft uplift thing.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to him being like, you know, fuck those guys. Do I need to go to that like, why would I go there, like, recon till I die, you know, that kind of thing, whatever.
Yeah.
And he's like, dude, if you want to go get real work, you need to go work for SOCOM.
Okay.
You're going to get assets, you're going to get helicopters, you're going to get jobs, mm-hmm. go work for them. So I reenlisted. You know how you can, like, I don't know how it really works in every service, but you can reenlist with, like, a incentive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I really want to go to sniper school. So if you put sniper school on my docket, then I reenlist and we make it a part of that and whatever. Sure. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
So I reenlisted with the
MARSOC bundle. Thing
being, yes, I'm going to I'm going over there.
Right? Okay.
Yeah.
And so me and a couple of my close buddies, we do that and we fly back to California and assessment and selection, go through the whole process. And I got dumped into Alpha Company, which is the company that is here. And, you know, I was saying this when I was talking to those guys out there. I don't think I knew or I understood. You know, have you guys ever heard, like, your first platoon's always going to be your first platoon. You're mm-hmm. never going to have another one like it.
Yeah.
You're never going to feel the same way as you did. Like, the relationships, the experiences, the thrills, the things that made it unique, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
You're never going to have another first platoon. My first platoon in recon was cool. But when I went to Alpha Company, I had a unique set of leadership that I've been around now, not forever. Like, I've done 40 years in the service or anything. But I've been around long enough to know that you don't get that kind of
camaraderie.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was a unique dynamic of putting things together. You guys know, like, the New England Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys have seen, like, however you feel about them. But, you know, when you got Brady and who's the tight end?
Well, Christian would know.
Yeah, sports ball is my thing.
Oh, do you know what I'm talking about?
No, not at all. No? Okay. Sorry.
Not big sports people.
Yeah.
No?
We're
no.
too big.
Okay, but that team had, like, a weird conglomeration of talent.
Okay. Yeah,
it just happened to range. Come together, and yeah. it happened to work out, and the coach knew what he was doing, and he put the right people in the right spots. They didn't have the fastest, you know, the dude in the league or the best. They had John, you know, Tom Brady, but... that was how Alpha Company was.
Okay.
And
a unique mix of
it was a unique
talented mix. Individuals.
It was a unique mix. And our company commander was feared by people 3 or 4 ranks above him. So when you have that, it's kind of a nice place to be.
Absolutely.
I didn't know it. So I went to Alpha Company in the beginning of 2008. And we had a different commander at the time, and he stepped aside, and the new commander came in. You're from California, so you know where San Jacinto is?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's in Palm Springs.
Yeah, yes.
There's a mountain there, right? They call it Cactus to Clouds.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. You guys, yeah. So we're doing our PMT, or I think we call it CCE, but, you know, like, your pre-mission
training
prep, right? And we're just finishing it. And the new company commander walks in and he says, I want everybody on Sunday afternoon to show up at the battalion. We're going to go climb Cactus to Clouds. And we show up there at midnight. Well, we show up there in the afternoon and we drive up to this San Jacinto place, you know, whatever. And we end up doing this, I don't know, 11,000 foot, mm-hmm. you know, hike up the mountain. And that was how he basically, like, you know, welcome to the jungle, boys. We're going to go do this thing.
Nice.
Well, that dude, multiple deployments with him as the company commander. And how many times you come from, how many times has the company commander been in the stack with you?
Oh, yeah. I mean.
Right? Yeah. I mean, and if so, then you've experienced this kind mm-hmm. of leadership. But he was the guy that was like, I'm not going to send you to go do something that I'm not going to do myself.
Yeah.
Right. And we, you know, it was a tough few deployments, right? It was great because it was busy and we got to see a lot of things and learn a lot of things, but it was also tough.
Sure.
And we had leadership that was like, I know this is going to hurt and maybe we don't all come home from this one, but if you're going, I'm going to go too. Mm. And that was the company leadership.
What rank is a company commander in MARSOC?
He's an 04. So it's the same as like a company sergeant major and a company commander at like a Green Beret company or he's an 04.
Yeah. Every single one. They go out with us.
He's the same.
Most part.
Really?
Most part. Yeah. Like for the most part, our company commanders do attach themselves.
Which is...
Our company commanders attach themselves with a platoon or whatever it is who's going out.
How many platoons are in the... Is it three?
Typically, you'll have like your four plus HQ.
Okay.
So you'll have... you'll have like... which weapons will fall under HQ.
Yep.
That kind of thing. Yep. FOs, you know... that kind of thing.
Well, that's a pretty good practice.
And it is. And I think that's a big thing. And in regiment too, it's one rank above like average army. So, you know, you have a captain as a company commander, not a lieutenant. So, so they have to have, you know, experience in a lot in a regular infantry unit before they are able to command.
Before they can come over and go through, do they go through Ranger school? Cause there's a difference between Ranger certified and regiment people, right? Mm-hmm. Like, do you have a scroll or do you just have a
tab? And tab. Yeah. So I always say true Ranger is both, right? You have a tab and a scroll. So you've been to Ranger school and you're in Ranger regiment.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because if you want to compete as an officer in the Army infantry, you kind of have to go to Ranger school.
Like, yes, you do.
To be...
And you have to. I mean, that's how you learn how to do combat operations, infantry combat operations, you know, so.
Small unit leadership, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're also, you know how to be hungry,
Know something about hungry and hallucinating with no sleep as well. Like that's a crazy one. I always tell, I was in Ranger school this one night where all you see is the cat eyes, you know, just everybody's walking in line. Everybody's just, I mean, just droning out, right?
And, were you in the jungle phase or was it before
this
that?
Was in Dahlonega, Georgia. So this was mountain phase.
Yep.
And I'm walking. I'm just walking. You just autopilot, right? You know how it is.
Uh-huh.
And here I am. I get to this like stop and I stop and I look down and there's like water. And I'm like, how am I going to cross this? Right. And someone wakes me up by grabbing me. I'm walking into a bush, just walking into a bush, dead asleep, walking. Yeah. And stuff like that. So yeah, you get used to being hungry and tired. Yeah.
Do they use CS when you guys are in?
Oh yeah. 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 So we've done the CS gas training too. And it's just,
The funniest thing I think I've ever experienced is sitting in a hide site, going through our recon school, which... There are a lot of differences, but there are a lot of comparisons. Mm-hmm. Right? You get one MRE a day, you know, you're going to run around, you know, burn 5,000 calories a day or whatever. Well, you know, 550 cord, right? Your little suspension lines and whatever.
Yeah.
Well, you take a CS grenade.
1 second. They're going to have to tell him to be quiet. It's picking up on the mic.
Oh, are they? Is that what you're looking at when you look down there?
So CS gas.
So I'm sitting in a hide site. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I was on watch. You know, for the sake of the story, I wasn't, right? I was cleared to sleep. But I remember kind of like rousting a little bit and looking over. And I see one of the cadre, right? And he like puts his hand to me, basically says, like, shut up, right? And he's tying a CS grenade the ankle of the dude next to me in this little tree circle that we're in. And he ties it. And then he pulls the pin and he tosses it to me and he walks away. And then you watch my friend like the come on.
Yeah.
And so you're like, oh crap. Nobody has a gas mask. So you just have to eat it.
Yeah.
Right. You just have to enjoy the CS. And so you just watch this guy get up, and he has like one of those little poncho liners. You guys know what I'm talking about?
The camouflage
little blanket.
Woobies.
The woobie.
Yeah.
And you see him like running around with a woobie with a CS grenade tied to his foot.
Chasing him around.
You're just like, oh gosh. Okay. Well, I guess this is our life for now. So just embrace it and move on. I've dragged us out.
Okay. No, it's okay. I think the point of that too is just the camaraderie that you're building. I think that's a really important part of your story is painting that picture of what it looks like to get back in that team environment.
Yes. And so I kind of want to get to the end of the team environment because that is what I was talking about when I finished college and I was kind of in a rough place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You endured the same
thing. And I went back to a rough place later, but I was in Alpha Company, all the people that are here that Robert Irvine's, you know, made possible for us. And I don't remember how many deployments it was or how that all went down. But I'm not even going to do the math, but deployed a lot in the same company. It was great. Deployed a lot with the same people, a lot of these guys. Mm-hmm. After two deployments, I remember being in a place where I went to the company XO or our executive officer, like the second in command. You guys all see him. And I remember telling him, like, hey, look, I was kind of being a bitch, if I'm being honest. It was a tough deployment. We were troops in contact every day for months, and I was being a bitch. And I basically went to the commander and I said, I think I need to, we call it taking a knee, like take a break.
I think I need to
go to some schools or maybe skip a cycle or something because I'm processing stuff right now that I'm not doing a very good job at doing that. And I think I need to breathe.
Yeah.
And so he was my team commander for my first deployment. So he was a good friend of mine. So if I was saying that to him, he was like, yes, okay, makes sense. You probably need that. And so they took me out of the company and they put me in language school. I was in language school for maybe 6 months, which we were doing about 11 months in between deployments at that time.
Okay.
Because we weren't on a jort. So everything was 6 or 7 months for a deployment, but we only had 3 rotators.
Okay.
So you were doing like 6, 6, 6.
You had some time off.
So you had about a year in between. So they put me in language school, and then, you know, one of my close friends that, you know, we commemorated this morning, he was doing a SOTF job. And it was just this weird stacking of things that happened. Mm-hmm. July of 2012, one of the other guys that I kind of grew up with, remember I said I was at 3rd Recon Battalion?
Yep.
He was on a motorcycle chasing a guy into a compound. The guy was able to get to a corner, to a PKM, fed him up as soon as he broke in, and that guy died, right? Justin died. Well, Justin obviously needed somebody to escort the body home, as hero flights or angel flights or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And so because of that, the team was weak, or not weak, but short.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so some of the SOTF folks were like, hey, we kind of need some extra dudes. So my buddy's like, well, I'll jump on that job to, you know, uplift the team so that they can keep doing operations.
Sure.
Well, he jumps on it. His wife's here right now. And, you know, like Afghans do, it was hot, it was tired, and nobody wanted to do the thing, but Taliban are now, you know, they're maneuvering. So he's like, well, if we don't do something right now, then, you know, there's a good chance we're all going to die. So he maneuvers, takes a murder hole through the head, and he gets smoked. They're both from Michigan. So I'm in Michigan. I'm a pallbearer for one of them, and I'm a just attending the other funeral.
Sure.
And as that happens, there's a green on blue with another team from my unit where they smoke the team sergeant, the team commander, the EOD tech, one of the other guys gets tagged. So it's just like the one thing it's after compounded. The other. Yeah, just it all happened.
Yeah.
I had been home from this deployment at this point for about 6 months, 7 months. It's probably fair. And I get a call from Bagram. They're like, hey, would you like to come over and take Dan's spot? Don't ask me that.
Yeah.
Right? Because what would you do? Of course I would.
Yeah.
Say right? Yes. Of course I would.
Yeah, you have to.
So that when we talk about mental health, when we talk about, I did that and I was happy to do that. And if you asked me today, I would do it again. But I processed all the things after burying my friends. I wasn't even home for the other funerals because I was already over there to fill over for one of my buddies.
Yeah.
Well, how do you process when you're in Afghanistan? I stayed there for a year. I filled that guy's job and did some other things and ended up falling in on another company that came in and they were like, oh, if you want to stay, you know, nobody's going to say you can't. So yeah. Like, oh, you want to stay? You can go do this. Yeah. So I stayed over there for 2012 to 2013 and as I'm looking back at that, I built these weird calluses on the way that I processed losing my friends.
Yeah.
But I was over there. Mm-hmm. So you're working and you are probably doing your job over there. And also you're not figuring out how to process something in a healthy way.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I didn't.
Avoidance, right?
Yeah. A 100% avoidance.
Defer.
Yeah, I just stayed busy. Defer. Mm-hmm. Gym, operations,
yeah.
Work.
I'll deal with it later. I'll deal with it later. Yeah.
And so I came home from that deployment and I had kind of like put that behind me, but my mechanism wasn't like I wasn't doing a healthy job of processing things. Mm-hmm. Right? Sleep was fucked.
Sure.
You guys ever heard of this TV show called The Family Guy?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yeah. The only way this guy slept starting in about 2010 was I put Family Guy on a TV in my room and just let Lois and Peter talk to each other and I would just fall asleep. That was the only way I could do it.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yes. Now that I'm married, my wife doesn't like having TVs in the bedroom, so that doesn't work. But that was it. And I realized early on, like, this is... Oh, actually, I probably didn't realize it later, but it was super unhealthy.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I've like talked to some people and engaged with some of the resources that are available to all of us.
Yeah.
That I realized that I had basically been putting fake band-aids on problems. Mm-hmm. But everything was okay because I came home from that deployment. I was assigned to a team sergeant, like with an ODA. Sure. Or as a team chief.
Okay.
Right. It's a little bit different, but same thing. But when you're busy and you're responsible for people, you definitely aren't thinking about yourself. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean thinking about yourself in like a selfish way, but you're just not
taking care of yourself.
You don't have a finger on your own pulse.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I did 2, 3, 4. I did 4 or 5 years as a team sergeant and then got pulled out of that. I was at the training. We call it our T cell or our training cell. But basically, we're responsible for training the battalion as the companies go through their, you know, PMT prerequisite training for deployment for the mission essential task lists. You guys are probably familiar with that. And then I got assigned with a company sergeant major position, basically.
Yeah.
So I only go through this kind of like chronological thing because at the end of that is when I finally started to realize like, I'm kind of fucked. Mm. Like I'm kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
So my unit, I finish, I do the company position and then they offer me 2 jobs. One's at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. You guys know where that is, right? And the other one's down here in Tampa. So I take the Tampa job. And I come down here with my wife. And I left the people that were helping me get through every day, basically. Mm-hmm. I think it was probably 50% a support system of guys that are like, everything's okay. This is normal behavior. You know, everybody, you know, drinks half a bottle of bourbon to sleep at night. It's just normal, right? That kind of thing. And then there's the other side of it where you have purpose and you're accountable to other people. And then I came here.
Mm. And you lose that. Severed immediately.
Severed immediately. It sucked. Coming down here, breaking away from my tribe, it's a lack of a better term, but it like just ate me. My wife felt it. That was probably the worst part. She doesn't know what's going on. She's asking me every day, like, what's going on with you? You're coming home. You have like this listless look in your face. And
yeah.
And I would try to like call my friends that, you know, that I used to be with, but a phone call is good, but it doesn't actually. And I'm like, what is happening with me? Why am I like, I'm a mature human being. I can deal with this. This has got to be, I can't be the first person. Mm-hmm. And then I started to remember how I felt 15 years ago when the football team was over for me. I know it sounds so trivial, but when I had walked away from this group of people that we had a mission together. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's not playing football, so it's not the same as going to combat, but there's a similar willingness to, I'll do whatever for you. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm willing to throw my body at this dude so that you can get over here with the football. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah, it's different, 100% different, but
there's correlations.
There's correlations.
And it's relative for your experience at the time too.
100%.
Yeah. And it anchors you back into a feeling that you've had prior, right? So it helped that bridge that gap.
Yep. And that was the beginning of the struggle for me. And I fought it head on. I fought it by trying to run away from it. There's a guy from third group. He's a sergeant major at my command right now that probably saved my life. My wife called him because she didn't know what else to do. Sitting next to a tree in my front yard, just lost. And let's just be honest. Like, my quality of life is much more than most people. I have no business like feeling sorry for myself or anything like that. And if you were really to ask me, like, why do you... I wouldn't even be able to tell you. You remember I talked about July and August, and we had this weird thing where Justin and Dan and Ryan, and we just kind of had this cascading of bad things happening. For some reason, every time that comes around, I just have a hard time.
Sure. Situational, post-traumatic stress is a real thing. For my injury, the anniversary, it took me years to realize this. It was years late, but around that time of September, I would just be completely wrecked. Like, I didn't know what it was at first until years later, where I was like sitting down with a therapist, and they said, "Well, when were you injured?" And they're like, that's why you're having all these emotions. It just kind of like stirs up the sediment a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Why do you guys think that is? That it's like an annual, but you know what I mean? Why
because your brain is subconsciously triggered and it's thinking, it's going back to those moments, regardless of what you're thinking, right? Your bracelet, you look at your bracelet every day, right?
Yeah.
And that time, it resonates with you. So that stirs those emotions up. And I'm a huge fan of your body having that muscle memory for that moment too.
Yeah.
That, and you know, when that time of year does roll around, are you actively trying to think about it or are you actively trying not to think about it?
Well, that's a good point.
Probably yeah. The latter, right? Well, then you're pushing it away, you're avoiding it, and it's bubbling and it's stewing. Yes. And when it does that for 5 years, 7 years,
it makes you think of it.
Now you're 10 years in and you've still not addressed it. You're still wanting to not think about it.
It's like when someone says, don't think of an elephant. What are you going to think about?
Elephant all day.
Yeah.
Elephant all day.
Yeah, right. Don't think about those bad things that happened to you during the time that, it's the anniversary again.
And just even throwing a text out, you know, I'm sure you reach out to the families and talk to the families a little bit more during that time. And like all of that.
Social media is just a...
Sure. That
you guys remember all the annual things like on this day,
slapping you in the face constantly as a reminder. So, like, you know, in talking about how to overcome that is diving in head first in that and getting that exposure therapy is what we call it. So challenging yourself to step inside that uncomfortable zone will slowly chip away at that.
Yeah.
And it takes years. It takes years to do it sometimes.
Yeah. Consciously think of your friends that you lost. Address the memories, the good memories you had, the bad memories you have. Put it at the forefront of your mind. Think about that. Physically talk to them. Hey, Ryan, thinking about you right now. Address it. Like he's here. You know, you can do things like that that allow you to engage with that memory and not avoid it anymore.
Journaling.
If you're able to write it down or talk about it out loud, hey, this is what I'm dealing with. This is what I'm thinking about. Well, then it becomes more natural, right? As you start to talk about things that bother you more, well, then it separates that negative emotion from the memory. And you just have the memory instead of the negative emotion that's attached to it.
Yep.
Because you don't want to think negative thoughts about your friends who passed away. You want to remember them in a positive light, right? That's the best way to do that. Address them. Hey, 7 days ago is the anniversary of one of my best friends in the world dying. Died in Iraq. And that's something that I have to, have to address. Like, hey, I miss you, dude. Like, I wish I could be talking to you right now. Mm-hmm. You can't not address it. And the longer you do that, that's the direction it ultimately goes. Mm-hmm. We talk to a lot of people who deal with the same exact things that you're going through, dude. Same exact, and we've dealt with it ourselves, and still do.
And that's,
we still do.
Importance of this event right here.
Yeah.
You know, that we're doing this weekend, why we're out this weekend, why the Robert Irvine Foundation's done 8 of these last year. You know, we're doing 10 this year. But the consistencies, the stories that we hear, getting back in that team environment, like you said, all of a sudden, I'm sure that you have a different tone of energy from this weekend than you did.
Yeah. This has been the best. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, please. Yeah.
Were you guys at the memorial this morning?
Or so
you guys got in after that, right?
So in my philosophy of that, why we're not there is because, even though we're a part of the team, the overarching team, we believe that it's important for the team, such as yourself, that close-knit team, to celebrate that intimate moment alone.
Yeah.
So respect that boundary from a distance.
I spoke briefly before. We flew the chaplain down here from 1st Battalion, and he did the thing, and I'm glad he did.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke a little bit before he did, and I think the term I said was it feeds my soul to see these dudes. It doesn't even have to be all the memories and the experiences and everything. Just having somebody that I can just, I'm just going to say the same thing I said when I was doing the little interview out here on the back patio, but like there is a thing, and you guys can probably relate to this. There is a thing that happens between two men when you are hanging your legs outside of a Blackhawk and you look across at the other guy and you hear a PKM staccatoing out of the ground and you're flaring to come in and land, and he just looks at you and it's a head nod. Well, that experience, that relationship, you can be my brother, we can be on sports teams together, but what just happened here as we went and did this thing, which you guys know, you've been there, you see, you've done this, right?
Yeah.
When you can't replicate that, you can't.
No.
Oh, I'm going to go block this guy, you're going to go block that guy. Well, that's cute, that's sports. Yeah. This is different.
Mm-hmm.
The thing you just said to me with your eyes is, well, if I take one, drag me off the X. If you take one, I got you.
Yeah.
And that's a completely different experience. And half of these dudes I haven't seen in 8 years. 10 years, some of them. But a lot of them.
Same feeling.
I've had that exact same experience with. And I've watched them rack a squad automatic 249 and jump off the side of a helicopter and give me a head nod and say, here we go.
Yeah.
And I've searched in life to find the same kind of man. That's the best way to put this. Relationships with dudes.
Yeah.
And I've never found it. I've never found it.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you guys think?
I mean,
I agree.
I completely agree with that. And that's your flirting with death so closely that, everything else doesn't matter. I mean, the things that we live in and deal with today, for instance, we're constantly thinking about longevity. That's always in the back of our mind, a fear of death. And we do things to prevent ourselves or extend our longevity. So I'm not going to smoke. I'm not going to dip. I'm not going to drink, right? I need to take my vitamins and all this stuff. And that's investment in the future. When you're in an environment with your team and overseas, you don't know if you're making it home tomorrow.
Yeah.
So how freaking powerful is that when you're sharing that moment with your left and right and you're in it and it's like you're sucking all the life out of everything around you because death is so near.
Yeah. And you can't replicate that. You can go ride as many roller coasters as you want. It's not going to be the same.
Yeah.
Right. But you also can't replicate the relationship you have with those individuals that went through that thing with you.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the importance of being able to bring those human bodies back together. You know, one of our good friends, his name is John Wayne. Did we already talk about him? I've done two today.
Rob did talk. Yeah. Talked with several of your guys about John Wayne.
I have stupid memories with that guy. I mean, he's just a... He's the guy you want to go to war with.
Mm-hmm.
He's that guy. He's got, maybe you don't want to introduce him to your family. But he came to my wedding and it was some interesting. he's just a badass dude. And, you know, he was the catalyst for this.
Yeah.
I don't know if Rob talked about it, but...
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all went to his funeral, you know, and I got to tell a story at his funeral and some other guys did too. And there was endless stories about this. I mean, he was just one of the guys. Like, it was an epic human being, larger than life. But you know, the house we're in right now, Keith's, he was like, dude, the next time I see you guys can't be another funeral.
Yeah.
And that's how we were starting to explore, like, what can we do? And one of the Gold Star family members had engaged with Robert Irvine at some event. And that's how this whole thing kind of came into
1-5 Marines at a reunite that we were doing.
That's
there
right. Because Charlie was at 1-5 before he.
Yep.
Not Charlie, this one, the Charlie other Williams. Charlie.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. From the foundation. Yeah.
Right.
So. And I think that's an answer to your question, too, is these types of events
will help you get close to that feeling. Mm-hmm. Because you, even, you know, you walk into a room and you find out someone's a veteran, they have something on the resume item right away. You know, you had that, like, yep, that, okay, you understand, mm-hmm, a little bit more. When you're with your unit, now you have a deeper understanding. And that's how you get it back. And something that we're really big advocates and proponents of is creating a community, you know, in our business as well. And through this, this connects people and keeps people connected. We have people that reach out and say, you know, I mean, I was thinking about suicide, but I watched a couple of these episodes, you know, so that's what they need. And we lack that exposure, and that's what we need to get back to.
Well, yes, 100%. If I could put it like this, it's important to be known, right?
Yes.
So I know what Army boot camp is. I know what RASP is. I know what Ranger school is. I know what they do at the regiment versus somebody who went to Ranger school and just went back to their infantry unit. Mm-hmm. I know what a jort cycle looks like. And I know what going to sitting on block. I know what those dudes, I know what you have, mm-hmm, right? The experiences you've had. It's important to be known.
Yeah.
These guys out here, they know me. Mm-hmm. They've known me in bad times. They've known me, when I maybe performed, when I was doing something good, maybe. They've known me in all of my, it's almost like I don't want to say it's the same as like a marriage, but
it is.
It is, because they've known me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, it's important to be seen. Known and seen, yeah, and understood.
Yes.
And they can look at me.
And let me add one in there. Being like accounted for as well, I think is huge. And this is something
100%
that, yes, I discuss with transitioning members out of the military, right? Is you lose that accountability, and then all of a sudden you don't have someone jumping down your throat when you're not at formation at 6 a.m. in the morning. Mm-hmm. Where do I go from there? Right. And then that's when you lose that. So now you're just adrift, floating off.
Right.
By yourself.
And where is that anchor point?
Or saying, David, hey man, I noticed this about you, and that's not how you normally operate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or
what's going on?
Yeah. What's going on? Because when that goes away, mm-hmm, well, we're the kind of people that just kind of like free flow and go.
Free fall, maybe.
Or free fall. Don't what do you guys think about mentorship?
Mentorship?
Yeah, like mentors. Partnerships that help.
A must. Yeah. An absolute must. Because like, how else are you going to forwardly progress without someone teaching you the trade skills that they've learned? I am a huge proponent of learning from other people's failures. Mm-hmm. And when you have a great mentor, you could have a conversation with them and learn all that they, and avoid that, right? And take that hard fail right off your docket.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's just talk about like granular level. Okay, so I've had some amazing mentors, and I could sit here and list them all, but they were organically, it just ended up happening.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? They didn't come to me and say, you're coming up into a position that I just did, and I would love to share and be a sounding board for you or something, mm-hmm, right? That didn't happen. And I also didn't go to any of them and say, you know, gosh, I'm really looking for a mentor. Do you mind if I can I label you as my mentor?
Yeah.
None of that actually happened, but there's a lot of different opinions on like how deliberate you should be about that. I mean, what do you guys think? Because men without mentors that have walked through similar valleys that we all do, mm-hmm, they're lost. It's a horrible experience.
Yeah. And I do. I think that, you know, being a little bit more open, we've seen this kind of change in like recent military, as far as like in 2008, it's very different, like approaching your chain of command for an issue like post-traumatic stress or having an issue is much different than it is now.
Yes.
It's much 100%. More open and understood. So same thing with that is you do, I do believe that you should communicate, like, mm-hmm, at the end of the day, is we need to be communicating to better ourselves and not focus on the traditional like traditions and hazing and all this stuff. And like, I went through this suck, so I'm going to imply, you know, push it onto you. Yeah. it's different. And I think we're much more like a focal point's more on leadership now. It's like, how do I become a better leader?
Yeah. Well, what do you guys think about, I don't know, like connecting mentors with mentees? I mean, is that something you guys,
we do all the time?
Yeah, absolutely.
You guys do?
Yeah. And I think it can, like you mentioned, happen organically. And you don't necessarily need to seek out a mentor. Find somebody in your life who you consider a role model, somebody who has something that you want, who possesses a trait that you want to also possess, who possesses a skill you want to also possess. Learn from them. That's basic mentorship right there. You don't need to put a label on it or, you know, outright seek it, but learn from the people around you the best that you can. But surrounding yourself with a positive community and a strong community is first and foremost. You can't do it if you're
Agreed.
Trapped inside your house, if you're drinking alone, if you're right. avoiding things. Like you have to be engaging, and that takes responsibility, or it takes accountability from somebody that you trust too, right?
Yeah.
Hey, dude.
Yeah.
You're fucking up right now. Let's get you out.
And that's a great point that you bring up too. Yeah. Is the military kind of has that no bullshit mentality too. Yeah. In a world, especially in the United States, where everything's so passive and just back-ended, right? It's soft. I'm not going to go up to you and be like, hey, you look like you're fucked up right now. Let's let's get this addressed, right? In the military, you get that.
That's true.
So now we have also, we're more connected than we've ever been in the entire, you know, existence of humanity. But yet we're so disconnected with others because
we're connected electronically.
But we don't have real conversations where we're like, it's always like, oh, we're good. I'm fine. Are you good? You know, if you, you, next time you have a conversation when someone says, oh, I'm good. Yeah, I'm fine. Say, are you doing? Are you really fine? And watch the response difference to that because they're baffled by it because no one is asking them how they're doing. So we're much more isolated, even though we feel so connected.
Yeah. Well, I think, and I've been trying to figure this out, right? Because all the things we're talking about right now, right? So if I ask you, are you okay? If somebody asks me, even if I'm not, I'm going to say,
exactly.
I am. I'm going to say, yeah, man, I'm good. How are you? Yeah. Let's defer this over to how are you doing? How's how's your wife? How's your kids?
Small talk,
Are you playing football? You know, what are we doing? It isn't until you start asking specific questions like, well, you know, asking in what are your biggest challenges at work right now? Or so that's a bad example. But as you're asking more in depth, but we don't talk about that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so
superficial,
very surface.
It's 100% superficial. And even all of my best friends that are here right now, they would say the same thing. Tommy, how you doing? I'm doing great. Okay, great. Oh, that's good to hear. You know, how's Shauna, my wife? And oh, great. Yeah, that's good to hear. But if they were saying, how are you dealing with, you know, the 2008 to 2015 time in your life?
Mm-hmm.
I would have to say, fuck, man. I guess I'm not. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm actually kind of, fuck, dude, to be honest, I had an episode about 6 months ago that my wife had to call a guy at work that came to my house and sat with me for 12 hours. Like, I would say that. That would be my response. But the first, hey, Tommy, how are you doing? You're never getting there.
Yeah, exactly.
You're never getting there.
Exactly. And then, but that's my point too, is I'm good. And then you counter it with, are you really good? You know, and then you'll see kind of a different response to
that's actually a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it's almost like I don't believe you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what
and
I mean?
Then and they're like,
because how are you good?
And it also it reassures you that I want more than that, right? Yeah. Because you don't want to go to someone at Starbucks and say, hey, how's your day going? Well, you know, I just broke up with my boyfriend. And, you know,
My day is shit.
Let me tell you real quick before you get your mocha cappuccino. Yeah. But yeah, so stuff like that. I think it's the community is such an important factor and the resume item associated with it. Am I going to get the same response? You know, me asking you, are you okay? It's going to be a very different response than if Starbucks, you know, barista is asking you if you're okay, because you have known what I've done as well, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. So like finding that right community and people who share that similar energy as you is equally as important.
Well, and you know, honestly, military success inside of your little microcosm in the military, it fucks you on that. Like, it screws you. All right. So, you know, David is a squad leader. Now he's a, platoon sergeant. And now he's a company senior enlisted or however you guys climb up through the regiment ranks. Okay. Are you willing to say that you're struggling with handling something, but you're also supposed to be, employing us on combat operations and evaluating threat, mitigating risk. Mm-hmm. And you're doing all this, but you can't handle your own shit.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you going to do? Well, you're going to hide the thing that you have to deal with, and you're going to do your job.
Yep.
Because one makes you look incapable of doing the other. Now, is that true? Probably not. Do we all think that's true? You're goddamn right we do. Right.
You have to remember the oxygen mask theory.
What's that?
Put yours on first before you help others.
Well, yeah.
If you're unconscious, sure. Can you help anyone else? How are you going to help?
No.
You're an E9 in the Marines too, right?
Yeah.
How are you going to help people if you are not helping yourself? If you're not in the best possible position for yourself to help others, and everyone falls.
I agree 100%.
Yeah. My analogy to that one, it would be, is the dishes. I always use it. Oxygen mask theory too, but it, like, the dishes is a real good reference too, is because if you just wash your plate as you go, right? We're doing the maintenance that we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, or we just let them pile up and we're gonna have to deal with that shit later.
Yeah.
Yeah. The junk drawer effect.
Yep.
The junk drawer.
If you keep throwing, you guys ever have a junk drawer when you
100%.
Throw up?
100%.
Yeah. Everyone's
got one.
If you keep throwing everything in the junk drawer, eventually you got to sort that out.
Yeah.
Like, eventually you got to go into the junk drawer and figure everything out.
Yeah.
Spring cleaning. Yeah.
And that's the thing. So we, you know, and we'll wrap up here in a minute, but my point is that we need to be, like, finding the tools from the mentors around us, the people who've achieved what we want to achieve, and put that in our toolbox and start doing the cleaning, the maintenance, so that we could slowly chip away at all that shit that is piled up on our backs and that we're carrying in our ruck.
What do you guys have seen as far as, like, I'm going to say best practices because it's like a thing we say in the military, but look, I am constantly trying to engage and help, you know, the people that I love.
Yeah.
So you guys have done 135 of these, 140 of these, mm-hmm. something like that. I mean, what has been success story? Like, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, what are some things that you've seen where you're like, oh, that's a win for the home team. And wow, the way you went about that was amazing. And I mean, what do you...
So when we have people that say, wow, I'm not going to kill myself anymore. That's a real comment that we've gotten several times.
Yeah. Really?
Several times. And mm-hmm. and this is what we said about, like, you know, the things we do in everything's relationships, right? Everything is about the relationships you achieve and you know, establish in this world. And Robert Irvine Foundation has, you know, amazing resources, and as a nonprofit entity that does stuff like this, we've created our years of you know, resources as well. So we provide, you know, certain veterans, we connect them to certain organizations, whether it's, you know, plant-based medicines is a huge one. And that might be something that, you know, you're in the future, you can explore when you're retired. But that specifically,
do you guys know Jonathan Wilson, Johnny Wilson.
We just had him on.
Oh, yeah. You did.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Green, so he's Green a big break. Advocate. Yeah.
Yeah. We just had him on. His episode aired yesterday.
So you met him.
His episode came out yesterday. Oh. How odd is that?
I guess I'll listen to that. But
yeah.
No shit. Okay. Well, you said plant-based, so I thought about him immediately.
Exactly. But
him and his wife are, yeah.
That's the immediate results we get of people, like, you know, on
it's
Monday.
It's crazy that you just.
Yeah. Monday, we have a certain feeling. On Tuesday, we have a completely different person. Yeah. That's like a very, very crazy one too. But yeah. So is there, I know we're kind of cruising over, but is there anything that you want to kind of say about kind of last minute things and like maybe about this event? And
I mean, I alluded to it earlier, I guess. I don't know if you're listening to this and regardless of whatever organization you come from or unit you served in, or even if you're not, you weren't military background or whatever, putting in the time. And, you know, Charlie, I mean, that guy was every, I think on Tuesdays every week, we were on Zoom meetings and he was there every, do the work, like put in the time and invest in your people, because you don't know the value of that, but you do know the value of human life. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I've been down that dark road before, and you just don't know the impact that you're going to have when you bring people together. Mm. And if you're looking at something that happened badly, I'll use John Wayne as an experiment, you know, as an example. Every single human being here right now that's wandering around these hallways and hanging out by the pool, if they knew that reaching out to him or flying up there or setting up something like what Robert is doing here, they would do it immediately. Mm-hmm. But you never know when that's going to happen. Mm. So it just takes like a constant pressure, I guess. Does that make sense?
Sure. It does make sense.
You
continual engagement.
Yes.
Yeah.
You have to.
Don't let it fall off for yourself and for others.
And I'm guilty of it. Yeah. Like I've been lackadaisical about it, and you know, I should pay for that. Yeah. I'll go out there and but do
this week,
some.
This weekend we're not.
Yes, but we're not, right? Yeah. We're bringing in our people and we're taking care of them, but it has to be a constant thing.
Yeah.
Mm. And yeah, it does. And so we're going to do this once a year. We'd love to keep, you know, Robert Irvine Foundation as a part of this. But regardless, we're going to keep doing this once a year annually. Mm-hmm. And luckily, the current Alpha Company command team came down for the memorial this afternoon, mm-hmm. or this morning. And we're going to start incorporating this, because I just don't see another solution other than getting fucked up text messages saying, well, so-and-so suck started a Glock today.
Yeah.
I don't see any other solution other than
getting everybody consistent. Back together.
Yes.
And creating that community, staying a part of that tribe. I think that's the highlight of this episode is find your tribe, find your purpose. And you know, don't 100%. Isolate yourself.
Do you, I know we're working against time right now, but do you know a guy named Sebastian Jungers?
Oh yeah.
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 Have you read the book, Tribe?
Yeah.
Yes.
We met him in November.
You did?
At a convention. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. But so Tribe is amazing.
That I share that with all my friends.
Great. Right?
Because it delves into all the realities of like who you are and what makes us, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The kind of people that we are. Mm. I mean, it really does.
We're social creatures
yes.
at the end of the day, and we're not getting enough of that.
Yeah, because he was world. With that army platoon. Remember, he did like a year over there?
Yeah.
And he talks about it. He's like, why do men want to go back to war? Mm-hmm. Well, they don't want to go back to war. That's an ugly, shitty thing.
They want
to
fight for something.
They want, yes.
Yeah.
They want to have a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
They want to have the connection they had when they were at war. They don't want to go back to war. War sucks.
Yeah.
War is ugly. It's a shitty thing.
Nobody likes it.
You see, nobody likes that. But I've never in America experienced the same relationships that I have had mm-hmm. with people when I've... Remember we talked about looking across the Black Hawk you know,
doing the head nod.
That thing.
Yeah.
I've never experienced that here in the US. And I love this country. I love our people here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you're an American, I love you. It's part of our thing. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you right now, I've never experienced that. And that's what he talks about in that book. And it's amazing to me. He tells a story about when he's like hitchhiking along the road and that guy gives him half of his sandwich.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't know this guy from anybody. Why would he do this to me? Mm-hmm. Well, because we're,
we share this thing.
Right. Because we share this thing, right?
Yeah.
I wish I could just communicate that to more people, but well, thank you guys for having me here.
It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you, and we'd love to, you know, obviously, you know, stay in touch, and while you're going through your transition out into the civilian world, keep us in mind, you know, and we'll be that, you know, kind of back and forth as well. If you're like, hey, I'm just going through a rough day. We do the same thing. We have people call us at 1 a.m. sometimes.
Yeah.
You know? Really?
Phone's always on.
Every single guest that comes on the show, we touch base with, and they have our personal numbers and reach out to us all the time. So, and that helps us, like, believe it or not, the biggest therapy for me is this kind of thing, you know, able to work through. Sometimes I'll say stuff on the show and I'll be like, man, I should take that advice.
I should follow my own advice.
And I'm like, yeah. It's a reminder of myself that I'm not alone. You know, you're not alone. We're in this together. We just need to talk about it and open it up a little bit.
What made you guys start doing this?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the same thing. We started this 3 years ago. We sat down in my office in my house, and you know, I have a unique story. He has a unique story of rescue, and I have my injury and special operations and going back to serve after I was hit. So, you know, I wanted to bring kind of like the injured piece to things. And he was like, I want to talk about rescue. And we're like, let's marry the two together and come up with a 360 degree view of what stories look like from start to finish for rescues across the board. Right. So we started doing episodes like that where we reunited those guys who haven't seen each other, you know, since being rescued by the bird or whatever, you know.
So were you a Pedro guy, Dustoff?
Yeah, Pedro.
Okay, yeah. Nice. Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah.
Do you have a PJ background or is it a SAR?
SAR. Yeah.
Okay.
Helicopter background. Yeah.
That's awesome, dude. But
yeah, that's more or less the concept is, and it slowly evolved into stories of resiliency and continued service, and now we've gotten to expand into, you know, enacting the change that we want to see just like this.
Yes. So thanks for coming on and sharing today. Beautiful, beautiful story.
Thanks for having me.
And I'm anxious to see, you know, how you fare here at the barbecue later today.
Thanks for your time, Tom. Appreciate it. Yeah.
This has been the Medevac Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for sharing or for joining us today. If you guys want to get in contact with us, hit us up on social media, Instagram, it's at Medevac Podcast, or at the website medevacpodcast.com. We'll see you guys next week. Thanks.
Until next time.